Even his name is doubtful. During the trial, various witnesses claim to have known him as John Sims, or Andrew Miller, or Arthur Wills. The source of his obviously ample income was equally disputed. Some said he was a silent partner with Jukes in the highly successful firm that manufactured croquet equipment. Croquet was the overnight rage among athletically inclined young ladies, and it was perfectly reasonable that a sharp young businessman, investing a modest inheritance in such an enterprise, should come off very well. Others said that Pierce owned several public houses and a smallish fleet of cabs, headed by a particularly sinister-looking cabbie named Barlow, with a white scar across his forehead. This was more likely true, for the ownership of pubs and cabs was an occupation where underworld connections were useful. Of course, it's not impossible that Pierce was a well-born man with a background of aristocratic education. One must remember that Winchester and Cambridge were, in those days, more often characterised by lewd and drunken behaviour than serious and sober scholarship. The most profound scientific mind of the Victorian era, Charles Darwin, devoted most of his youth to gambling and horses. And the majority of well-born young men were more interested in acquiring a university bearing than a university degree. It is also true that the Victorian underworld supported many educated figures down on their luck. They were usually screevers, or writers of false letters of recommendation, or they were counterfeiters, doing a bit of soft. Sometimes they became magsmen or con artists, but in general, these educated men were petty criminals of a pathetic sort, more deserving of public pity than condemnation. Edward Pierce, on the other hand, was positively exuberant in his approach to crime. Whatever his sources of income, whatever the truth of his background, one thing is certain. He was a master cracksman or burglar, who over the years had accumulated sufficient capital to finance large-scale criminal operations, thus becoming what was called a putter-up. And towards the middle of 1854, he was already well into an elaborate plan to pull the greatest theft of his career, the great train robbery.